I'm Nick Mangold, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hey, you sound a lot more rested and erudite and European. Just give us the quick rundown. Where did you go again?
Oslo, Norway. Barcelona, Spain, like three different cities and towns in Spain from Barcelona on day trips, and then London, England. I am fatter, I am happier, and I am slightly sad that the week I had to come back had to be all the nonsense of the NFL draft. But thankfully, we are here to help push through some of the BS, to erase some of the clouds, and to illuminate your day. And before we get to our guest of the day, I just want to remind you guys that we have made things easier for you guys who like listening to all of SNY's original podcasts. If you're a fan of the Mets, the Jets, the Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, recruiting, you just have to subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just remember that's SNY.TV audio network, and make sure you please rate and review the channel. Because that's how people find it, you by bringing more light to it, by letting people know that you like it, and you can still find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, all that stuff as well. And make sure that you guys, while watching the draft this weekend, you also check out SNY's draft coverage for the Jets, which will feature our guest today, Tony Pauline, who will join us in just a second. There will be live editions of Jets Nation Draft Day Special airing Thursday at 6 p.m., so before the draft, and then again midnight after the draft. Then we'll have another one Friday at midnight after the second and third round, and then again Saturday at 7:30 after the draft wraps up. You can find that all live on SNY, covering every angle of the Jets draft and featuring the one and only Tony Pauline, who joins us now. Tony, thank you for carving a few minutes out of your very busy schedule to hop on with us again.
Well, thanks for having me. I've been busy, as you say, funneling through all the nonsense of the draft, but I'm glad there's plenty of nonsense to basically sift through, and draft day's almost here, just right around the corner.
It is.
Tony, let's just ask one of the nonsense things that's been floated around the Jets, and nonsense or not, I don't know, is Paxton Lynch, the Jets, you know, interest in him? Number one, you know, just curious if you know much about that, and, you know, what do you think about Paxton Lynch as a prospect?
There's definitely interest there. I mean, they spent a lot of time with him. They worked him out. Mike Maccagnan said he's intrigued and he likes his skill set, and it's understandable. I mean, Paxton Lynch has got great size. Of all the top quarterbacks, he's got the best arm. You know, he's built basically for Northeast football in an outdoor stadium. So there's a lot to like there as far as the physical skills. The problem with Paxton Lynch is, number one, he scored alarmingly low on his Wonderlic test, under 20. You know, by comparison, that's almost half the score of Jared Goff, and he scored significantly less than Carson Wentz, who scored a 40 or 41, depending on who I speak with. Now, you know, the Wonderlic is not the end-all and be-all, but it is a good measure of intelligence, problem-solving, and the ability to think quickly on your feet. And in this day and age of multiple sets by a defense, multiple looks by the offense, the ability to really read and react quickly as a quarterback and make your checks, you know, you want a first-round quarterback to have a Wonderlic score closer to 30 than closer to 20. So that is a red flag, I mean, for any team. What that tells me is that it's going to take a while for Paxton Lynch before he truly is NFL-ready. He could turn out to be a very good quarterback, but it could take a little while. The other thing I'm hearing about Lynch is he wasn't very complimentary about his Memphis defense. Down the late part of the season, they lost four or five games. They gave up 30 or more points in each game. Lynch basically played relatively well in each game except for the bowl game against Auburn. I just heard that, you know, he made some comments that turned some teams off, questioned his maturity and the fact that, you know what, it may be a while before he's ready to lead a team on the NFL level. What it adds up for me is, and I know I'm babbling on here, what it adds up for me is I just don't know that he's a Mike Maccagnan, Todd Bowles type of prospect, especially at the quarterback position.
Well, that's interesting, and you know, I guess I'll use that to kind of jump into a philosophical question or point that I have, and you can kind of react off of it if you please. You know, you see with the trades up for the number one and number two picks, the idea that, you know, if you think, you know, the idea that you basically have to get a franchise quarterback, that if you're a GM, if you're a regime, you need that franchise quarterback instead of waiting for one to come to you, making the move to go get one that, you know, might be more of a 40-60 chance that he's not than, you know, a 70-30 chance that he is. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that you should wait and sit, and then if you want to make the move, you have to 100% believe in it rather than just making it to make it. I'm fine with a bridge quarterback, whether that's a Sam Bradford or a Chase Daniel or a Ryan Fitzpatrick. I guess the point I'm trying to make is why is it that every year when we have these fringe prospects, these Goff and Wentz and Lynch, these guys who we're not 100% sure of, by the time we get to draft week, there seems to be this fervor for them. Like, you have to go get Jared Goff. You have to go get Carson Wentz. When if someone had said that in December, people would have looked at you like you were crazy.
Well, I don't consider them fringe prospects. They're very good quarterbacks. I don't think they're franchise quarterbacks. I think if they were in last year's draft, they are the third and fourth quarterbacks taken. I think you're doing them a disservice when you call them fringe quarterbacks. They're good quarterbacks. They're just going to need a bit of time before they're NFL ready. I do agree with you, though. You know, there seems to be this, I don't know if the word is petulance to, you know, basically trade away, you know, future draft picks and almost entire future drafts to move up and get one of those guys. And the Jets did try and move up with Tennessee to get that first pick. I know people kind of blew me off when they read my report, but it's been confirmed. They did try and move and make an offer to get that first pick. You know, the fact is this is the quarterback position is so important this year, this time in the NFL, and people are willing to overpay for it. I mean, we've seen it in the past where quarterbacks, Christian Ponders, the Jake Lockers of the world, were significantly overdrafted. I think the thought process is if you can get a good quarterback, you might as well give away, you know, you get him, you go up and you give away what you have to give away to get him. I don't agree with that opinion, but that's what's out there. You look at, like I say, the failures of the Christian Ponders, the Blaine Gabberts, you know, those guys who went much earlier than expected. You know, the big question this year is where does Christian Hackenberg go? Is he going to, how overdrafted is he going to be? A guy who never completed 60% of his throws. You have to remember, football coaches do exactly that. They coach football. And when they see a guy who's 6'4", 6'4 and change, 225, 230 pounds, and he can throw the ball 60 yards down the field, they say, you know what, we're going to coach this guy to be a very good football player. And sometimes reason is thrown out the window.
That's a great point. And I think one of the things that's interesting, a lot of, you know, people have done studies and reports for, you know, Harvard and whatever, all these places. One of the things that comes up repeatedly is quarterbacks chosen in the first round have a much higher likelihood of success versus any other round, essentially, second, third, fourth, sixth, seventh. And it makes sense. And I think to some degree, Tony, to your point, people are invested in this guy. Whether he's worth a first round pick or not, they have invested, and we are going to live or die by this guy, right? You know, Jets can just go look at Mark Sanchez, Bills fans, EJ Manuel, et cetera, et cetera. I guess my question for you is, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit already with Paxton Lynch, but just quickly, do you think Paxton Lynch is worth a first round grade?
If I'm drafting somewhere in the late first, if for the Jets, I would, you know, let's start again. It depends on compatibility, not just the physical skills. What is the compatibility with the coaching staff, yeah, with the offensive coordinator, with your basically locker room attitude? What type of player do you want to bring in? That's a variable that you may never know about, but that's an important variable. You know, is he a first-round quarterback? If I'm the Denver Broncos and I've got Mark Sanchez sitting there as my my starter, you know, I am definitely considering Paxton Lynch at the end of round one. I never really consider Paxton Lynch a top 15 selection. I think it's a questionable pick for the New York Jets. Obviously, you have to look at who else is available to them on the board. Is he a first-round pick? The physical skills say yes. The Wonderlic score and some of the other things I'm saying makes it a little bit questionable.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, it's a totally fair point. It just seems that, you know, we can get bagged up in this whole talk about should they or shouldn't they and the weight of a quarterback and the value of taking one in the first round for hours. But let's move on to a position that protects the quarterback. Let's move on to offensive line. It's a position the Jets are in serious need of, even though they traded for Ryan Clady. No one really knows how healthy he's going to be. They only have a they have Ode Abushi at right tackle, but they have no real future developmental prospects. Jack Conklin and Taylor Decker are two guys that have seemingly been linked with the Jets. What do you think of their interest in that position, and how far do you think those guys could fall or rise, and could they be there at 20?
I'd be surprised if Jack Conklin's there at 20. I think Tennessee, depending on how quickly the first two tackles come off the board, I think Tennessee could make a move up to get Jack Conklin. They've got those extra picks. They desperately need a tackle. They've said that they want to move back into the top 10 if they've been linked to Conklin. So even if they don't move up to get Jack Conklin, they could swipe him at pick number 15. Taylor Decker, I think he's another guy. He may be there. I mean, a lot of people thought early on in the process he was going to be the guy for the Jets. I think it's a good pick for them. I've liked Jack Conklin for 3 years. He's played both left and right tackle. I think he's got terrific size. I think he's more of a right tackle prospect, but I think it's a situation where you try him at left tackle until he, until he proves he can't do it. Just kind of questionable as to whether or not it's nip and tuck as to whether or not he's going to be there. If teams start, if there's a run on pass rushers, if there's a run on defensive tackles, you know, there's a chance Taylor Decker could be there. I also think the wild card could be Jason Spriggs of Indiana, a player that they brought in, a player that they like. I'm hearing that they're kind of cool on Spriggs. They likely wouldn't take him at 20, but you never know if they trade down or there's no one else on the board available to them. You know, you can't have too many good left tackles and, you know, guys that you can maybe try at guard for a little while. And, you know, you don't know what you're getting with Clady. You know what kind of player you're getting, but you don't know what kind of durability he's going to show on the field. And if he goes down, what the replacement's going to be, both in the short term and long term.
You know, you just talk about, you know, guard and tackle and kind of, you know, some guys that are fungible. Last year's class seemed pretty interesting in that regard, right? You had guys like, and I'm going to forget all their names, so I apologize, but Cameron Irving, the guy who went to the Browns, the guy who went to the Giants, the guy, Brandon Scherff for the Redskins. Are they tackles? Are they guards? And so some of these guys, maybe in time, they can move out to tackle, but they're best served at guard, and so their value is lowered because of that. Maybe they're a second or a third round pick. Are there guys in this class that, when you look at what the Jets and what you know, what the coaching staff and Chan Gailey would want to do, that maybe they say, yeah, this is a guy we can take on day two, but maybe 3 years from now he could play tackle for us?
Yeah, two guys I think that would stick out in that sort of opinion that you just passed through are, you know, Joe Haig of North Dakota State, who basically blocked the blind side for Carson Wentz for the past 2 years. He played left tackle. A lot of people think he's better off at right tackle. Some people think he could start off at guard, 6'6", 304 pounds. You know, solid athlete, very nasty, and just needs to brush up on some of his fundamentals, but a good long-term prospect. Celeb Benyak of UCLA played right tackle. Terrific athlete, 6'5 and a half, 311 pounds. People feel he can be a right tackle. Some people feel he's better off inside a guard. He's a third, fourth round pick. And then a kid by the name of Alex Lewis from Nebraska. Played left tackle at Nebraska, 6'6", 312 pounds. He's got some growth potential. Again, a lot of people feel that, you know, he can start off at guard and eventually develop into a tackle. You know, let's not forget, I know this is a long time ago, but Jonathan Ogden, the Hall of Fame left tackle, actually played guard his first year in the NFL after his rookie season. So, you know, it's not without precedent that you start these guys off at guard and then basically develop into tackles. And in the Jets' case, you know, there is a need at guard. You hope that Ryan Clady could hold up, but you don't know. So if you get one of those guys I mentioned or another interchangeable offensive lineman, it could help in a variety of ways.
You know, this is an interesting draft for the Jets. One of the things that's most interesting to me is, you know, they have defensive help that they need. They need to find outside linebackers. I think Rich Simini wrote yesterday on ESPN New York that, you know, he wouldn't be surprised if they take two linebackers early in this class. And I think one of the things that actually helps them is when you consider that this class is so talented at kind of the defensive end, defensive tackle position, more kind of, you know, hand on the ground kind of guys versus, you know, stand up or, you know, edge rusher types. That might help the Jets because they don't really need any help, at least in the early rounds, we'll hope, after drafting, you know, a number of first round players like that. Who are you looking at in terms of guys that might be available on the first day or the first 2 days that you think, man, if I had a dream landing spot, you know, for this guy, it would be, you know, the Jets based on what they're going to, what Todd Bowles is going to try and do on defense.
Oh, my guy would be Leonard Floyd of Georgia. I just don't know that he's going to make it. I mean, I've watched Leonard Floyd since he was a freshman at Georgia when he primarily was a defensive end. And you can tell then, I mean, he was just going to be a disruptive force. He was a tremendous athlete. He was very explosive. Even as a freshman, you know, he was impossible to stop. He started off hot as a sophomore, kind of cooled off. There was even back in 2014, I projected him as a top 10 pick, but he kind of put the brakes on, did not have a good ending to his 2014 campaign. I mean, there's a guy, and last year he played more of a linebacker position. I mean, 245 pounds, 6'6", he's long, 6'5 and change. He's long like the Jets like their outside linebackers, runs under 4'6". You know, he's not just an up-the-field player. He makes plays laterally. He's effective in space. He can play in coverage. I mean, if I had the pixie dust to move one guy down to the 20th spot for the New York Jets, it would be great value. It'd be a great player. It'd be terrific need. That would be Leonard Floyd in round one. If you're looking at round two, you know, maybe you're talking about a guy like Kamalea Correa of Boise State, who I think is going to go off the board at the top of round two. But, you know, if he starts
to interesting.
And the Jets maybe trade up to get him, that's another guy who absolutely fills a need, primarily lined up at defensive end for Boise State, but is a terrific athlete, played some linebacker during the bowl game, terrific pass rusher, and again, a very good player that fits a need. So, I mean, those two guys in round one or round two would, I guess, be at the top of the let's hope they slide down to the Jets list.
You know, Tony, you mentioned sliding down, and we're talking about linebackers here, so I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the player that I've asked every single draft analyst that we've had on this show this spring, and that's Jalen Smith. Look, before that one play in the game against Ohio State, the kid was probably going to go in the top five. He probably had a chance to go higher than that. But now, with the medicals, with the doubt, with the questions, with all the rumors surrounding his knee, how far is he going to fall, and when is the Randy Gregory ceiling, is what I'll call it, the ceiling where he's fallen too far to pass on him despite all the doubts?
I'm just going to repeat what I reported at the combine, and that is, and people seem to catch on to it in the past couple of weeks, I think that he's going to be a last day pick. I don't think any team's going to take him in the first three rounds. I think, you know, unlike Randy Gregory, where Randy Gregory it was more of a personality disorder, personality trait that he could control, Jalen Smith can't really control what the future is. It's either the nerves and the knee regenerate, and he gets back to some form or semblance of himself, or they don't, and he really doesn't play football again. And there's just so many variables that he can't control, which makes this story so sad. You know, he's not going to play in 2016. Is he going to play in 2017? And if he plays in 2017, what type of player is he going to be? And is he ever going to be able to return to the type of linebacker that he was? You remember, this is not an offensive line position. This is a linebacker who basically was not just an up-the-field linebacker. I mean, he was an explosive sideline linebacker. I mean, his play was the ability to move to his right, stop immediately, and then go full bore to his left without losing any momentum, and then move backwards into coverage. So basically, you know, his game was covering a lot of area on the field. Will he ever be able to return to that? Again, as I said at the combine, I mean, the poor guy struggled getting up on the platform during weigh-ins, and then there was a lot of sadness there. You hope for the best. The bottom line is, if I'm a team like Carolina, where I got a lot of linebackers, a lot of good linebackers on my roster that I'm going to have to pay in the future, you know, maybe I consider taking Jalen Smith in the fifth or sixth round. Hopefully, he gets healthy, and then when I'm up against it in the salary cap, paying some of my talented linebackers, if he gets back to what he was, great. If he gets back to a fraction of what he was, well, maybe he can slide in there. You know, I just don't see him going until the last day of the draft.
God, it's such a sad story. It's just one of those things, like you said, it's nothing that he can control. It was a freak play and a game in which he had nothing riding on it, and the team really had nothing riding on it. and who knows what's going to happen to him from here on out.
And it was just, it's a freak injury. I mean, it wasn't just a torn ligament. I mean, you're talking about potential nerve damage, and, you know, that's rare. So, I mean, it seemed like all the stars were aligned against him, sadly. Yeah.
So, curious, a couple guys that might, you know, then let's say potentially go before Jalen Smith. You know, just let's say you're the Jets, and it's the end of the third round where they have, like, the 84th pick or something like that, 83rd pick. And so there, three guys are on your board. Who's at the top of your board? If you have Deion Jones out of LSU, Kyler Fackrell out of Utah State, and Jordan Jenkins, who do you want on your team? Or who do you want on the Jets, maybe?
Well, I'm picking Kyler Fackrell. I think there's a good chance the Jets could take Fackrell in the late part of round two. I mean, Fackrell is basically built for what the Jets want. He's a tall linebacker, you know, at 6'5 and change. He's a pass rusher. He's a prototypical 3-4 outside linebacker. The 6'5, 246, ran under 4.65 at the combine, plays to that speed. You know, a couple things about Fackrell, and I've watched him since he was a freshman. He's not just a pass rusher. He's a very good overall linebacker. He can play in space. He can play in coverage. He was terrific his first 2 years at Utah State, and there was some question that he was going to enter the draft following 2014, where he was projected to be a first-round pick. Hurts his knee, sits out the entire 2014 season, returns 2015, plays relatively well, also played well at the Senior Bowl. He looks really good, you know, on the hoof, as they say, and he plays that. Now, he's basically a system linebacker. He's a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's 25 years old. He's coming off a knee injury, but he's still a very good player, which is why I think, you know, if the Jets don't go past, go outside linebacker in round one, a guy like Leonard Floyd doesn't fall down to him. They pass on a guy like Noah Spence. They don't make any trades, and Correa's out of the question. You know, Kyler Fackrell, I think, would be an option for them in round two.
Okay. Tony, moving to the secondary, so my last question before I hand it off to Brian, if he has anything to hand off to you. Todd Bowles had Tyrann Mathieu in Arizona. He had Deion Buchanan. He was kind of one of the guys who gave Deion Buchanan his now career, turning him into that big linebacker, that now prototypical safety linebacker hybrid that we're seeing kind of take the NFL by storm a little bit. Is there anyone in this draft that could fit that mold?
Oh, they may already have. They may have it on the roster with the kid from Louisville that they took a couple years ago.
Calvin Pryor.
Yeah, Calvin Pryor. I mean, they may already have that player. I think the bigger need is not so much that sort of safety, but maybe a young cornerback to develop for the future, you know, because you're going to need you're going to want an upgrade at the nickelback position. You're going to want somebody when Darrell Revis, you know, finally hangs up the cleats. So, you know, just to answer your question, Darian Thompson of Boise State, 6'2", 208 pounds, can fill that role. I think Kevin Byard, another guy from Middle Tennessee who's going to be a last day pick, I think can also fill that role. Sort of a box sort of linebacker, very good against the run, but not a liability against the pass. Elijah Shumate of Notre Dame, another guy I think that can play that sort of position, also a last day pick.
Well, you know, you talk about finding guys, and I'm with you. I think the Jets would be wise this year to find a developmental player because I think we can just assume D. Milner will play out his rookie contract and then go elsewhere. You know, Darrell Revis is, I think he's 30 now, right? Or on the other side of 30. You know, Buster Skrine is, you know, I think best used as a slot cornerback. So, you know, there are some guys that I'm curious about. I mean, one guy in particular, but maybe if you can give me a last day guy too, like Kendall Fuller, it seems like he, you know, he's got the pedigree from his family, all these guys who play in the NFL. He's obviously slipped a little bit, you know, with maybe some health concerns. But, you know, who are guys that if you were the Jets, you'd say, this is a player I can invest in, and maybe 2 years from now he could be a frontline starter for me.
If you're looking at the last day picks, I mean, two guys who I really like a lot would be Darryl Worley of West Virginia, just over 6 foot tall, 204 pounds, runs in the 4.55s. I mean, he just shut down opponents in the pass-happy Big 12 to the point where quarterbacks just stopped throwing his way. I mean, he was a terrific player. I think he's flying under the radar right now. I have him ranked as a fourth-round pick. He's probably going to go fifth or sixth round, but he's the type of guy that two or three years down the road, I mean, he could be, end up being a starter for you, and everyone says, well, how come this guy didn't go in the second, third round? Eric
Josh
Murray
Norman
of Minnesota,
yeah.
Just under 5 foot 11, 199 pounds, was terrific throughout his senior season. I mean, he came into the year rated below his teammate Brian Bodie Calhoun, yet he outplayed him from the word go. He was one of the few cornerbacks who really slowed down Josh Dotson this season in a game early in the year, which was in Minnesota. The problem with Murray is he's terrible at the Senior Bowl. Just did not look good at the Senior Bowl. Had a very mediocre combine, which pushed him down. But you look at the film, and the film is really, really good. You know, you could get some potential value there. If you really want to roll the dice, you're looking at Rashard Robinson, the former LSU player. He's got the physical skills, 6'1 and a half, 180 pounds, runs in the 4.4s. Early in his LSU career, people projected him as the next great defensive back, the next great cornerback to come from that program. Had some off-the-field issues, hasn't played football in the past 2 years. But you know what? You know, you got a good athlete there who showed skills in the past. If he's there in the sixth or seventh round, you want to roll the dice. You could have a very good player, as you said, 2 years down the road.
Oh, Tony, we really appreciate the information. It's a lot of great info. You guys can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Pauline. Also, check out all of his information on draftinsider.net. And again, you can find him on SNY all weekend, Thursday through Saturday, Jets Nation Draft Day Special. Before and after the draft. Tony, thank you very much. As always, a ton of information, a ton of good insight, and we really appreciate you hopping on.
Thanks for having me, fellas. My pleasure.
Always great insight from Tony. He is one of our favorites to have on. He always seems to have a nugget or two that no one else has. I've lost track of how many times he's told us the Jets were interested in some guy in March, and only to have them sign him, a veteran, or to draft him. It's a remarkable source of information, draftinsider.net and Tony's Twitter feed. Brian, we're taping this on Tuesday afternoon of draft week. The first round is scheduled for Thursday night. As we mentioned, I have been out of the country. I am a tad behind, as I think I mentioned to you before we taped on air. I saw the Paxton Lynch rumors and lost my mind for a second, trading up to number 7 to go get a guy that a week ago was a second or third round pick. What do you see coming from on Thursday? Anything specific that you'd like to have happen, or any one specific thing you'd like to see?
I get that there's a sense among fans that there's this urgency. We've got to, sooner or later, you got to bite the bullet and go get a franchise quarterback. And I agree. You do have to do that. But you have to do that for a guy that maybe you don't really believe in? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, are we doing it just to do it? Or are we doing it because it's the right thing to do? You know, I mean, Mark Sanchez was a failure for the Jets, but you know, they believed it enough that they moved up to the fifth pick or fourth pick, whatever it was, and got him. In the case of Paxton Lynch, right, I see all the physical measurements. I see what he could potentially be. I see that he's going to need to spend time on the bench, and to Tony's point, Wunderlich's an issue. And that, to me, goes hand in hand with another problem that I have with him, is that his decisiveness. Like, if you thought Mark Sanchez was indecisive, well, guess what? You know, I mean, you might as well set up a Jets West camp,
and
because
see,
this is going to happen all over again.
And that's a big problem, because that doesn't change. You know, you don't get tighter windows and more pressure and all of a sudden become more decisive. That's not a skill set that grows over time for the most part. Usually,
and that's one of the things. We talked about Josh Norris with that about, right? Basically saying that if you think that someone's going to learn this trait and they've not already learned it when they were in college, like, you are making a bad bet, essentially, I think is what Josh told us, right? And so you're exactly right.
Right. Like, you can improve on things within measurement. You know what I mean? Like, within a measured area, you can improve. You can, like, Tom Brady's arm was stronger at 31 than it was at 23. But that was because he had an NFL weight program. He knew how to build his muscle. He knew how to set his feet properly. He knew better. He had better mechanics to propel the ball from his feet.
His footballs were underinflated. Right. Exactly. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you mean.
We're not getting into that.
Just leave
that alone. But like my point is you know, if you're an inaccurate, indecisive quarterback who struggles with pressure at times in college, you're going to be an indecisive, inaccurate quarterback who struggles in the pros.
Right. Going up against Cameron Wake and Dominican Sue. Right. And, right.
So
yeah.
I look at it and the idea that the Jets have to go up and get a quarterback. I don't necessarily believe that to be true because they won 10 games in their first game. Look at it. The Seahawks regime didn't draft Russell Wilson until the third round of year three after failing with Tavares Jackson and Charlie Whitehurst, you know,
right.
And Matt Flynn. So I don't know that you necessarily need to find the quarterback for the next 10 years this year. Yes, you need to find the guy at some point. But I would be interested, we can transition off this. I would be far more interested in them addressing cornerback, in them addressing
yes.
offensive line, in them addressing edge if the right guy fell.
Like the guy, you know what it's like, Corey? It's like the guy who just had a girlfriend, like that everybody knew who had a girlfriend just to have a girlfriend
yeah.
versus like the guy who just like he has the girlfriend because he really is compelled to have that girlfriend, if that makes sense. Do you know what I'm saying? Like
it's a perfect analogy.
Yeah. And so I think that's what I'm trying to just make the distinction of, like, get the guy that you believe in. Don't just get a guy to have a guy. That's the wrong reason to go up for someone.
So, all right. So at 20, give me the guy that you believe in. Doesn't have to be a specific position, but give me the guy that yeah. you believe in at number 20.
Well, you know, I think to Tony's point, you know, someone like Jack Conklin, maybe they slide, probably not. Especially with, you know, guys like, you know, people now talking about who's the other tackle, Ronnie Staley, like maybe going ahead of Laremy Tunsil, which seems insane, but I'm going to say, give me Taylor Decker. I believe in Taylor Decker, Ohio State offensive tackle. And it's not just, well, that's cute. Nick Mangold was the last first round, you know, offensive lineman taken out of Ohio State. And now this is the next round. I mean, I think he's a great player. I think he could be a good fit for this team. Certainly he's going to, you know, take some adjustment and he's big. I mean, he's 6'7". So I don't know how he'll do always with the speed rush, but I certainly think he's got that Big Ten mentality, kind of nasty play that you like. And, you know, I that's the guy I believe in. Do you have a guy you believe in?
No, I'm not. No, you know, this is not my time of year. This is not where I believe. The thing that I like about this time of year, the one of the few things that I like is judging and eyeing the machinations, the who falls, who rises, and what runs cause what guy to slip. And, you know, we're already seeing a guy like Miles Jack, who was being talked as the number one overall pick. Our buddy Josh Norris now has him going, I think, eighth overall. Slipping past because you have DeForest Buckner possibly rising. You have, like you said, Ronnie Stanley from Notre Dame jumping into the top five possibly. Joey Bosa is falling. Tunsil is falling, which is crazy to see. And if for some reason Paxton Lynch lands upside the top 10 or 15 players, you know, and if Conklin goes up, you have all these guys. Someone's going to fall.
Yeah,
someone
right.
who should not be a 20 is going to be a 20. Or maybe is going to be at 18 or you know, maybe
yeah,
for some
right.
reason, Miles Jack falls to 11. It's just I enjoy that and I enjoy watching that and seeing who's going to move, who's going to fall. I know the Jets looked, you know, reportedly, you know, I think we should clarify. McCagnan said that the Jets called about the number one pick.
Number one pick, yeah.
There have been multiple people who said that the Jets tried to trade up for them. Whether you want to call that semantics or whatever, I don't know how close they were. I would not be surprised in the least if the Jets completely trade back. I wouldn't be surprised if they go all the way back to the back of the first round. If somebody wants to come up, let's say the Browns, if the Browns want to come up for Lynch at 20 and maybe drop back to the top of the second round and pick up a few future picks in the first place, maybe for this year or next year, I wouldn't be upset about that.
No, nor would I. I think what seems most likely is McCagnan knows that he's going to get, you know, his best starter on day one. And right. And he did it last year where, to your point about someone's going to fall to them. Right. If, you know, if Paxton Lynch is going from the late 20s to, you know, to eight, and then, you know, someone else, or seven, and someone else is freaking out because, you know, they want Connor Cook or whoever, and they move up, you know, right? That means two players that the Jets weren't expecting might be available to them at 20, or, right, might be a discount at 16. So it's going to be interesting, but I think at the end of the day, they'll stay put, and then they'll use some of their later day picks to move around. That's what they did last year, right? Yep. They kind of moved back and, you know, got some picks and got some players who, you know, whatever, they added depth to the roster. But I do think they will be a little bit more targeted this year. I'm not saying they're not going to go best player available, but I certainly think they're going to try and fill offense, outside linebacker and tackle or offensive line, you know, with legitimate players, and then, right, see what else kind of falls to them. But this is a draft that's going to be great in terms of cornerback play. And you talk about the interesting things. I know we've disagreed on this. We've got a bet going. Jalen Ramsey, you know, he's probably going to be a top five player to me, which is insane, because I just, the history shows that cornerbacks don't go in the top five, but this one seems to be like the one who's going to do it, and has the potential to be great.
Because he's a corner safety hybrid who can do everything. The one thing that I would say, and we'll wrap up after this, the one thing that I would say, and, you know, I just talked about, you know, players falling. It looks like that entire wide receiver class is going to fall into the areas of the 20s. And we've talked about this in multiple occasions, right? Brandon Marshall is probably not going to be here at least after next year, possibly after this year, okay? Eric Decker has, I believe, next year is the last year on his deal. I might be wrong. It might be one more year, but I'm pretty sure 2017 is the last year on his deal. They don't have, Anunua is a wide receiver tight end hybrid. You know, Devin Smith, they need to draft players at the position. Devin Smith can be a very good player, but I still think they need other players, young players at the position. If someone like Treadwell or Doxson or Coleman, or if all three of them are there at 20 and they felt good about it, it wouldn't surprise me to see them give Chan Gailey another weapon, to give whoever plays quarterback another weapon, and take a value guy who, you know, 2 months ago was a top 10 pick and is now slipped to the bottom half of the first round.
It totally could, and that's something that I do worry a little bit about, right? What happens if Laquan Treadwell is available at 20 in a good way? Like, he's not OBJ or he's not any of these guys. He certainly, you know, could be a great possession receiver, but I think they would be very tempted if he's available there, and he very well could be, to your point.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, that is it for us before the draft. We'll be back on Friday with a podcast wrapping up the first round, kind of previewing the rest of the draft. But since it won't come out until late, we'll probably just make it most of a first round wrap up, talk about what the Jets policy is and what they did and what they didn't do. We hope to have a guest. We'll figure that out. We don't know who that's going to be yet, but we hope to have someone on to talk. We want to thank Tony Pauline again for joining us. He is always excellent and always a pleasure to talk to. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony Pauline and read his stuff, Tony Pauline, or read Tony Pauline's stuff on draftinsider.net. Again, I'm going to repeat something that I said at the beginning of the show. If you guys want to see Tony this weekend, make sure you check out all of SNY's Jets draft coverage, which will feature him along with all the other cast and crew of Jets Nation on their draft day specials, Thursday at 6 p.m. and midnight, Friday at midnight, Saturday at 7:30 p.m., all on SNY, covering every angle of the Jets draft. And as you guys know, SNY covers all angles of New York sports. So make sure you guys subscribe, rate, and review the new channel for us, SNY.TV's original podcast. If you're a fan of Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, recruiting, all that stuff, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, and rate and review it on iTunes, and give us a little push, and that would be much appreciated. You can also give Brian a push on Twitter, at Brian_Bassett, and on thejetsblog.com, where you will find all your Jets draft coverage throughout the weekend.
And you can give Corey a push on Twitter, at Corey Griffin NBC. Ask him about the jamón and what's the word for wine in Spanish?
Vino.
Vino.
I think it was
jamón y vino.
Yeah. Do that because I snuck some into the country. So if there's a customs officer listening, I won this round, pal. I won this round, and I'm going to enjoy
Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp is not happy with you.
I know he isn't, but he can deal with it. That's all, folks, for us. We'll be back on Friday. Until then, keep calm and jet on.
Chi-town is draft town.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.